Let's read Belgic Confession, Article 37, the first paragraph. Belgic Confession 37, paragraph 1. Finally, we believe, according to the word of God, when the time appointed by the Lord, which is unknown to all creatures, has come, and the number of the elect complete, that our Lord Jesus Christ will come from heaven, corporally and visibly, as he ascended with great glory and majesty, to declare himself judge of the quick and the dead, burning this old world with fire and flame to cleanse it. Last week, we looked at the first 69 weeks of Daniel 9, 7 weeks plus 62 weeks, and we noticed that there were significant differences regarding these first 69 weeks between the dispensationalist view and the non-dispensationalist view, because practically everyone who doesn't hold the dispensationalist view, whether they're pre-mill, post-mill, or a-mill, holds the same position on that subject. This week, we're going to look at the last, or 70th week of Daniel 9, and we're going to treat this 70th week according to the dispensationalists. We're not going to get into the right view, except incidentally, this week. But here, as regards the 70th week, the differences between the dispensationalists and everyone else, including Reformed amillennialists, the differences are even more significant and massive. So let's grasp the standard dispensationalist teaching regarding Daniel's 70th week. Where does it begin for the dispensationalists, this 70th week? Because it begins after something and at something else. According to the dispensationalists, Daniel 9's 70th week begins after what?
A large gap.
Yes, the large gap, which is the great parenthesis, the period of the New Testament, Christian, Catholic, or Universal Church. The 70th week for the dispensationalists begins after the great parenthesis. It begins at what?
The secret rapture.
At the secret rapture. And at the rapture, the dispensationalists claim Christ comes blank his saints. Christ comes for his saints. So here's the timeline. We'll put this on the board. Here is the dispensationalist timeline from the perspective of Daniel 9. We have 49 years from Artaxerxes' decree in Nehemiah 2. And then we have 434 years all the way up to Christ's triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And then we have, I'm going to put a few dots in here, dot, dot, dot. Then we have the great parenthesis. The great parenthesis, this big long period, which is now 2,000 years and onwards. And then this mark is the rapture. And then we have a 7-year, a literal 7-year period called the Great Tribulation. Now, when does Daniel's 70th week end, according to dispensationalism? It ends at something, and it ends before something else. According to dispensationalism, Daniel 9's 70th week ends at
The end of the Great Tribulation.
Yes, when does the Great Tribulation, or 7-year period, or the 70th week end? Because it won't do to say it ends at its end.
Is it the 70th second coming?
It ends with Christ's second coming. So the rapture is Christ's first, second coming. And then we have Christ's second coming. And the dispensationalists call this Christ's appearing, or Christ coming with his saints. So at the start of the 7-year tribulation, we have the rapture, Christ's first, second coming, when he comes for the saints and takes them out of the world. And then Christ's second coming, or Christ's appearance, is when he comes back with the saints. Now those are distinctions without a difference in real terms, because the rapture, when Christ takes us up to be with him, spoken of in 1 Thessalonians 4 and 1 Corinthians 15, is the same thing as the second coming, Christ's appearing, Christ's revelation, and the end of the world. But they split the two up. So that's what happens at the end of the 7-year tribulation, the 70th week, Christ's second coming. And this is before a period called the millennium, the 1,000 years. Is everyone clear on our little timeline there? Now it's time for us to look at the handout, which is the diagram of Daniel 9, 24 through 27, that I mentioned before the class and we gave out on earlier occasions, and Taylor has his there and he's sharing it very nicely. Yeah. Now, we have the handout there of the diagram of Daniel 9, 24 through 27. Go over it with a magnifying glass, if you brought one with you, or your bifocals, or your varifocals, or even with your unaided eye. And can anyone spot in these four key verses, that is the verses which deal with the 70 weeks, can anyone spot any of the four things where we said the period begins or ends, or this 70th week, something comes before it or after it? We're looking for, number one, the great parenthesis before the 70th week. Now, it's 2,000 years long, and that makes it more than four times the 70 weeks, 490 the way they take it, so it's four times the size of this, so it should be pretty hard to miss a 2,000-year period. So we're looking for the great parenthesis before the 70th week. We're looking for the rapture at the start of the 70th week. And we're looking, number three, for Christ's second coming at the end of the 70th week. And we're looking for, number four, the millennium after the 70th week. So in effect, what you have here, it's sort of like Where's Wally? You know, and you've got to get a Where's Wally, and maybe sometimes it says there's one Wally on this page, or it doesn't tell you how many Wallys there are on the page, and you've got to try and find as many as you can. But here you've got a Where's Wally, and we're looking for four Wallys. With your unaided eye, bifocals, varifocals, or all the way up to a magnifying glass, and if anyone wants to bring a microscope, has anybody found one of the four? Any Wallys been spotted yet? Brian hasn't spotted a Wally. You're maybe not looking hard enough, Brian.
I don't need to, I know they're not there.
Brian isn't even bothered looking because he knows they're not there. Anybody else who hasn't given up as easily? Who's not discouraged and is looking hard? I see, Mary, you're looking hard. Any success so far?
No.
Anybody found the great parenthesis? Anyone been taken up with the rapture? The first, second coming? Or the second coming, or the millennium. I mean, the great parenthesis is 2,000 years. The millennium is a literal 1,000 years. So there's like 3,000 years in there. And then there's the second comings of Christ, the first, second coming, and the second coming. I mean, these are big things. Now, usually, even if you're not that good at Where's Wally, and you were told there's four of them on the page, you'd be able to get one or two. And then if you stay a bit longer, you get three, if not four. But no one found Wally, And none of the four things are there. In fact, I'm tempted to think, to say, actually, if you're looking for Wally, you really are a bit of a Wally yourself. Yep. And now remember what the dispensationalists have told us is the key hermeneutic for interpreting Scripture, but especially Old Testament prophecy. What is it? In one word, Brian?
Literalism.
That's the key, interpreting Old Testament prophecy. Literalism. And you say, well, you know, you're the one with this literalism. Where's your great parenthesis? Where's your rapture? Where's your second coming? Where's your millennium? Some literalism. Brian?
It's a mystery.
Brian says it's a mystery. And the dispensationalists call the great parenthesis a mystery period. But Brian's point is, as I understand you rightly, it's a mystery where they get this from. Now, let's move from looking at the beginning and the ending of the 70th week to the content of the 70th week. What do dispensationalists say regarding its content in verse 27? Let's start with the individual who is mentioned at the very start of our English translation, and he. Who is this individual? A single person, according to the dispensationalists. Who is the he who's mentioned as a he three times?
Is it the Antichrist?
It is the Antichrist, according to the dispensationalists. And therefore, in this 70th week, this literal seven-year tribulation, we have the Antichrist. He is the he. And he, let's read it, verse 27, and he, that is the Antichrist shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week, he, the Antichrist, shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations, he, the Antichrist, shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined, shall be poured upon the desolate. That's the he, that's the individual, according to dispensationalists. Who is the corporate, the group spoken of in the text? The Jews. And he shall confirm the covenant with many. That's the group, and that's the Jews. Earthly, ethnic Israel in the land of Canaan, Palestine, Israel. And when it says he, Antichrist, shall confirm the covenant with many, according to the dispensationalists, the many Jews means not all Jews. He confirms the covenant with many Jews, but not all of them. Why do they say not all, apart from the word many, but why do they say not all? Because some of them by this stage are going to be converted, and they're going to see through the Antichrist, and they're going to be, since they're good dispensationalists, though the church has been raptured, there'll be a few dispensationalist books around there, and they'll see through the Antichrist and his nefarious treaty with the earthly Jews during the seven-year literal tribulation. So he, Antichrist, shall confirm the covenant with many Jews, the nation of Israel, back in the promised land 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease, and so on. Now, we've looked at who the individual is, according to dispensationalism, Antichrist. The group, many Jews, ethnic Jews, in the land. What then are the actions of the individual Antichrist towards the group, the Jews, in this seven-year tribulation, the 70th week, according to the dispensationalist reading of Daniel 9:27? And there are three things here. Number one, he will make a political covenant. He, Antichrist, will make a political covenant with the Jews, many of them, the nation of them, back in the promised land. Verse 1, he, Antichrist, shall confirm the covenant, a political covenant, with many, that is the Jews. So what would be involved in this covenant that he makes with the Jews, this political treaty or agreement, what's he promising to do? A covenant made with the earthly Jews in the land of Israel, from the perspective of the dispensationalists. Brian, you're shaking your head.
You know, I can't even imagine it.
You can't even imagine it, Brian?
No, it's that ridiculous.
It's that ridiculous. But imagine their view, though.
That's what I mean.
But you can't even imagine their view.
No.
Julian?
Well, presumably it's to confirm, give them the land.
Yes. Julian says it's to confirm them in the land. Covenant, you can have your land, and you can have it safely, and you can have it to its uttermost limits. You can have your temple again, and this temple's up and built, and you can have your sacrifices, and you can have your priesthood, and presumably you can have your ashes of the red heifer again. So, Antichrist makes a political covenant with the Jews at the start of the 70th week. And then he makes the sacrifices cease. He makes a political covenant, but later he makes the sacrifices that he had pledged that they would be able to offer in the temple, in the land, safely, according to the Mosaic law. He makes these sacrifices cease. So he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, which they understand to be 7 literal years. And in the midst of the week, the 7 literal years, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation, oblation equals offerings, to cease. So things are looking good with the making of this covenant for the Jews according to their earthly ritualistic desires. But then, halfway through, and they're very clear, half means specifically half of a literal 7-year period, 3.5 years in, he stops the animal sacrifices and the offerings. So the burnt offering and the peace offering and the sin offering and the trespass offering, and then of course the grain or meal offering and the drink offerings, and then the priesthood is no longer functioning, there's no incense being offered in the temple either, and the whole thing is scrapped. He breaks the covenant, you could say. He made the covenant, that's the first thing, and now when he makes the sacrifice cease, the second thing, he's breaking the covenant. He's reneging on his covenant promises in the midst of the week, 3.5 years into the 7 years. With me so far?
Yeah.
Okay. Your imagination coming back, Brian? So, he makes a political covenant. Then he, 3.5 years later, makes the sacrifices cease. And then, third, he makes the land and other things desolate. So he makes a political covenant, he makes the sacrifices cease, and he makes the land desolate. And here we're looking at verses, at verse 27, the 4th and 5th, that's the last two lines. He shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. So he makes the thing desolate, the land, the city of Jerusalem, the temple, the people, the Jews are going to be persecuted. This is the dispensationalist line with this text. And this period is called the Great Tribulation, yeah. And then they call the sort of 7 years the Great Tribulation, although really it's only sort of for the Jews, it's the last half. The last 3.5 years, the Great Tribulation. But there's a phrase they use that's found in the Old Testament that they especially ascribe to the last 3.5 years of their 70th week. It's in Jeremiah 30, verse 7.
Trouble.
It's called Jacob's trouble. This is the time of Jacob's trouble. And you read Jeremiah 30 and you think, these guys have the 70th week and the great tribulation and the Jews on the brain. You read that passage and think, Jacob's trouble. It's not talking about anything, 2,600 years in the future. Jacob's trouble. The overspreading of abominations in the middle of verse 27. The dispensationalists say that the abominations that are brought in by he, and they take to be the Antichrist, this is the promotion of idolatry and the idolatry of himself. And then, according to the dispensationalist scheme, after the second coming, at the end of the 70th week, come the literal 1,000 years, the millennium. And the dispensationalists apply a large chunk of one of the verses in Daniel 9:24-27. They apply a large chunk of one of the verses to the millennium. Can your imagination rise to this one, Brian?
No, I'm not sure where that is.
Okay.
Verse 24.
Mary reckons it's verse 24, and she is right. The six things at the end of verse 24, those six things refer to the new condition that obtains on planet Earth among the Jews at the start of and through the millennium. To finish the transgression. 70 weeks are determined to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. The first three, finishing transgression, making an end of sins, and making reconciliation for iniquity, do you think, does that fit with the millennium? No, it doesn't. There's a lot of sin in there about in the millennium. And at the very end of the millennium, but nevertheless, in the millennium, the vast majority of the citizens are wicked, are Gog and Magog. This is the premillennial and dispensationalist reading of Revelation 20. And the church is like a tiny city besieged on all fronts. So finishing transgression, making an end of sins, and making reconciliation for iniquity. I mean, how in the wide world that goes. And then it says to bring in everlasting righteousness. And by everlasting righteousness, they mean people's lifestyle. You think, everlasting righteousness? Well, number one, it's not everlasting. It's only 1,000 years. And then there's sin in the millennium. And what about Satan's little season at the end of it? And then there's sealing up the vision and prophecy. And this is claimed to be a reference to, no more vision and prophecy, because Jesus Christ will be on the earth and he will speak directly from his own throne in the capital city of Jerusalem. And he will anoint the most holy, the temple, the Holy of Holies will be anointed by Jesus Christ in the new temple that is built. And we will explain, Lord willing, the six things which are determined at the end of the 70 weeks next week. Everyone with us so far?
I was just going to say that Armageddon and all that features fairly heavily in eschatology. Are you having it right at the very end, Satan's little season?
Julian's asking about Armageddon and Satan's little season. We are going to deal with Armageddon and Satan's little season, but we're not going to deal with it now, though. But we are; it's going to be in these classes. Yep. Now, let's look more closely and critically at the dispensational interpretation of Daniel 9, verse 27. First of all, in terms of pronouns, we hear a lot about pronouns today. And here we're thinking of one pronoun The individual spoken of as he, three times in verse 27 in our English translation, and at the very start, and he. What is the antecedent of the word he in verse 27? Antecedent simply means what's it referring to in the previous lines. What do dispensationalists say is the antecedent of the he at the start of verse 27? What it's referring back to. For instance, if I said, I was talking with my neighbor the other day and he was showing me some lovely things that he had done with fencing around his property, and then he told me about his wife's health, and then he said he's had to leave the car in because he's having some problems. I talked at the very start about the neighbor, and I said he, and you understand the he refers back to the neighbor at the very start. So what is the antecedent of he at the start of verse 27? So you're looking for something in verse 26. What do the dispensationalists say the he refers back to?
Presumably the prince.
Julian has got it. The dispensationalists say the he of verse 27 is a reference back to the prince. The prince being found in line 3 of our diagram, line 3 of verse 26. Now, look at the phrase the prince in verse 27. It is part of a larger phrase. What is the larger phrase of which it is a part?
The people of the prince.
So verse 26 doesn't say the prince shall come and destroy the city of Jerusalem and the sanctuary, etc. It says the people of the prince shall come and destroy the city and the sanctuary. And by the way, from line 3 onwards in verse 26, the dispensationalists and we see that as a reference to what? We did mention this last week. The people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary at the end of the flood, and desolations were determined. AD 70. So the prince is Titus, or perhaps you could even say the Roman emperor. The people of the prince is the Roman army. The people of the prince, the Roman people, in form of an army, under Titus, or perhaps even under the Roman emperor, the people of the prince shall come and destroy the city and the sanctuary, which happened in AD 70 when Jerusalem fell to the Romans. But anyway, our point now is the people of the prince that shall come. You can't take the he in verse 27 to refer to him. That won't work. It's a collective there. It's the people of the prince. So who does the he refer to in verse 26? The Messiah. Verse 26, line 2, Messiah shall be cut off, individual, and the people of the prince, that's a collective, that's a group that shall come. They will destroy the city and the sanctuary, which they did in AD 70. And we'll explain more about the he as the Messiah who does the things described in verse 27. We'll say more about that next week. He, the Messiah, shall confirm the covenant with many. 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he, the Messiah, shall cause sacrifice and oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he, the Messiah, shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. And so here, the dispensationalists have what we may say, they have the wrong man. They have the wrong man. And the dispensationalists here have confused Christ and Antichrist. Never a good thing to do, to confuse Christ and Antichrist. They've got a problem not merely with pronouns, but they've got a problem in confusing Christ with Antichrist. Now, there's a second problem with the dispensationalists' he in Daniel 9, verse 27. As I indicated, the last part of verse 26, from line 3 all the way to line 7, refers to the Romans under Titus, the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. And as I said, practically everyone agrees with this, including dispensationalists and amillennialists. Now, the prince, the people of the prince, most take it to be Titus rather than the Roman emperor, the people of Prince Titus, who was a ruler of them at that stage, they're in lines 3 through 7 of verse 26. We're talking about AD 70, and we're talking about the first century AD, right? Who is the he of verse 27, according to the dispensationalists? Antichrist. So from our perspective in the year 2022, the he of verse 26 is in the past, AD 70, first century AD, Titus. And then the dispensationalists come along and they say, when verse 27 begins, and he shall confirm the covenant, he means the prince, from the phrase the people of the prince. So he means this prince who is Titus. Only he doesn't mean Titus at all. He actually means Antichrist, not in the first century, but Antichrist in the 21st century or later. The he of verse 26 is in the past, 2,000 years ago. The he, who is the same he, this is their grammatical argument in verse 27, he's the future Antichrist. And you say, well, how can you say that the individual of verse 26 is the same thing as the individual of verse 27, and verse 27 is referring back to him with he? Well, they say, well, they're both Romans. The Antichrist is a Roman, like Titus, a Roman, at least Roman politically. Although many dispensationalists believe that ethnically the Antichrist would be a Jew. So this passage speaks about a Roman Antichrist. And so those dispensationalists who are sizable, who believe that Antichrist is going to be a Jew, believe that he's ethnically a Jew, but he will be the head of the anti-Christian kingdom, which will be especially a Roman, sort of Southern European conglomerate. So here we have the dispensationalist problem, linking verses 26 and 27. Number one, the people of the prince is referred to, they claim, by the word he. Number two, the prince of the first century AD, verse 26, is, in verse 27, he that is a prince in the 21st century AD or later. And then, of course, in between verses 26 and 27 and the dispensationalist scheme, you have what? What have we got to insert between verses 26 and 27? The great parenthesis. So you have the people of the prince, AD 70, in verse 26. Then you have 2,000 years and counting in between verses 26 and 27. Then you have a he after this unmentioned 2,000 year lapse, who is picking up on the prince in the people of the prince in the previous verse, but he's not actually the same he. Titus has been dead for 2,000 years. So I say, the dispensationalists have a problem with pronouns, or rather one pronoun, he. And it's not male or female, as in transgenderism, but Christ and Antichrist. The he is Titus in verse 26 in the first century, and in the he of verse 27, referring back to Titus in verse 26, is actually a person who will arise at least 2,000 years later. Everyone with me so far? How's your imagination, Brian?
It's doing okay.
It's rallying. Let's now turn from the crucial pronoun he in verse 27 of Daniel 9 to the crucial verb What is the crucial verb in verse 27 in this debate with dispensationalism? The crucial verb is confirm. So, and he shall confirm. So you've got the pronoun he, and now we've got the verb confirm, both of them coming at the start of our English translation of Daniel 9, verse 27. He shall confirm the covenant. Now, the dispensationalists translate this verb differently. He shall confirm a covenant. They say it means, and it ought to be translated, he shall make a strong covenant. That's James M. Hamilton, Jr. Or he shall make a firm covenant. John Whitcomb and Alva McLean take that view. So he shall confirm the covenant. They say he shall make a strong or firm covenant. Now, before we go any further, what's the difference between confirming a covenant and making a strong covenant? Just in English.
If you confirm something, it already exists, and you're confirming it.
Yes, if you confirm something, it already exists or is in place. But if you make a strong covenant, it, and this is the way they are going, it doesn't already exist. You see, the dispensationists need a verb here at the start of Daniel 9, verse 27. They need a verb which fits with a brand new covenant. Because the Antichrist, that's their view of verse 27, and the many, that's ethnic, national Jews in the land, the Antichrist who's going to come, he, according to their view, he's going to make a brand new covenant with the Jews at the start of the Great Tribulation after the Great Postponement and the Great Parenthesis and upon the Rapture. So they have to change it from he shall confirm the covenant. There's a covenant already made. He's going to ratify it and he will make a strong covenant. Can anyone guess what the problem for the dispensationalists is here? That the verb, gavar, is the root. The verb, rendered confirmed, is the right translation. The verb in Daniel 9:27 refers to confirming an already existing covenant. Not making a strong or firm covenant, but confirming one that already exists. And the verb in Daniel 9:27 does not refer to making a brand new covenant. If you want to say that, you would use the verb karat or natan. Brian?
They don't want something to exist. They have to make it a new one.
They have to make it a new one by hook or by crook, and we are going, therefore, to make a new covenant. And then, you see, the translation, he will make a strong covenant and he will confirm it. If you don't think about it, it actually seems like you're saying the same thing, only you're not. You've allowed a little bit of wriggle room, and then the wriggle room that you've gotten actually suggests more a brand new covenant, and then you can make that the Antichrist who springs up with the nation of Israel in the promised land. He will make a new one. Now, we sang Psalm 105 earlier. Here is Psalm 105, verse 10. And unto Jacob for a law he made it firm and sure, a covenant to Israel which ever should endure. That's the Scottish metrical version that we sang. The same import is in our authorized version, Psalm 105, verse 10. God confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law and to Israel for an everlasting covenant. Verse 8 says, God remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, which covenant he made with Abraham, and his oath unto Isaac, the next generation, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law, and to Israel for an everlasting covenant. And here the word confirmed means the covenant was already made, even its Abrahamic form. And it came to Isaac, and then he confirmed, made it
strong and ratified it, because it's already in existence, with Jacob. There's a different verb used, amad, than gavar in Daniel 9, verse 27. It's just another word for confirming an already existing covenant. And the same is found in the parallel passage, 1 Corinthians 16, verse 17. Now, besides this, there is a problem regarding coherency in their view. Can anyone see the problem? Verse 27, he shall confirm, and they want to say this is, he shall make firm or make strong the new covenant that Antichrist has made with many Jews in the land 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Does anyone see a problem with coherence here? Brian?
Yes, this covenant that he makes, which is going to be stronger, doesn't last very long.
It doesn't. It doesn't. Line 1 of Daniel 9:27 in our handout. He shall make firm, make strong the covenant for 1 week, which they mean means 7 years. He's going to make this firm for 7 years. But he actually doesn't make it firm for 7 years. He only makes it firm for 3.5 years, as the next verse takes whatever way they read it. But then you can say, but he says he's going to make it strong for a literal 7 years. But the text doesn't say he will say that I'm going to make it. You know, sometimes you make a treaty and you say the treaty is time limited. Like, for instance, there was a treaty between the UK and China, you know, that Hong Kong would be given to the British for a certain period of time. I think it was 100 years, and then Chris Patton was the governor. It was handed back to the China, and everybody knew we're counting down. The period of time is up, or was it 150 years? Anyway, but the period of time. So we made a covenant for this period, and then it goes back to Chinese rule. So if you say he shall make the covenant strong for with many for 1 week, which they take to be 7 literal years, but he didn't actually do it. But if you say he shall say, though it doesn't actually say that, he will say he'll make the covenant with many wrong for 1 week. Why would the Jews want to get into a covenant for 7 years? You know, can't you give us a bit longer than 7 years? You know, if we get this agreement with you for 7 years, are you going to break it at the end of it? Or what's going to happen after? 7 years isn't a long time in terms of national existence. And then he doesn't even keep it for the 7 years. But the passage doesn't say he will say, I'll make a covenant with you 7 years. It says, according to their reading, he will make the covenant strong for 7 years. But he doesn't. And it's not what he says or what he claims or what he promises to do, but doesn't actually keep his word. It says he makes the covenant strong for 7 years, according to their reading. But he doesn't. And therefore you ought to go back to the text and see that isn't the right translation. We haven't the right interpretation of it. Now, this class has been dealing with problems for the dispensationalists regarding their interpretation, chiefly of the 70th week. Last week, when we looked at the first 69 weeks, verses 26, 25 and 26, and in other classes too, we pointed out that they had problems with literalism. They say a week or a sevens equals 7 years. And you say, well, that isn't very literal. And you can't even prove that from Scripture. And then we said that their 49 years doesn't literally start at a certain point and end at a certain point, doesn't literally work. And then we said that the next 62 weeks, which they take us 434 years, they can't get it to start at an appropriate point and end there. So literally, it doesn't fit. Literally, it doesn't add up. And then we talked about the literalism. You've got this great parenthesis, and it literally isn't even there. But this week, and especially in connection with verse 27, we haven't been dealing so much with literalism. Here, we've been dealing with what's normally called the grammatical historical interpretation. Not literal interpretation, more last week and actually previous weeks, but grammatical historical interpretation. And grammatical means grammar. What do these words mean in a sentence with subject, verb, object, adjectives, how they're all linked together, and so on. And then grammatical interpretation and grammatical historical. Here's the history. How do these words fit with history? What do these words mean in this historical context? So they're dealing, the dispensation is verse 27. It's more grammatical, historical interpretation. Grammatical interpretation. They go with this pronoun he. And then in verse 27, and then they take it into verse 26, and they say that he refers to the people of the prince, even though it's a phrase and there is no he, and they say, no, it doesn't refer to the Messiah. But that is the he, the individual that are there. And then they make the he of verse 26, Titus, a Roman general, first century, and he, referring back to him, and then they make it some guy that's at least 2,000 years in the future. And we say, how's that grammatical? How's that historical? Where's your grammatical historical exegesis? Then we looked at the verb, confirm, and they want to make it make strong. That is a new, brand new covenant. And then if the guy, the Antichrist, really does make it strong, well, he makes it strong a week, it says, and the next line says that he actually doesn't make it strong a week. He actually smashes the whole thing in pieces halfway through his literal seven dispensationalist years. And so we say, regarding their interpretation, that when they play the literal card, that's not literal. And then whenever they engage in grammatical historical exegesis, it's not grammatical. It's not even historical. And we say this is terrible. This is a complete shambles. And you guys come to us and you say that this is the key. Without this literalistic interpretation, you can't make sense of Old Testament prophecy. You can't make sense of New Testament prophecy. The book of the Revelation doesn't make any sense. And we say, there has to be a better way than this. And Lord willing, we're going to look at the true meaning of Daniel 9, verses 24 through 27. To your great relief, we're going to look at the true meaning next week, Lord willing.